Bold. Brave. Herb. With Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 522 of the Bold and Brave Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by Emily Van Eck. She is an expert in nutrition and was recently quoted in a pretty amazing piece that was all about a new trend, not a great trend. It's called Skinny Talk Trend. We're going to explain what that's all about. So, Emily is a registered dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor with over a decade of experience supporting clients in healing their relationships with food and body. Good luck with that one, Emily. No, just kidding. Emily, welcome to the Herb podcast.
Oh, that's great. Thanks so much for having me, Pam. I'm delighted to be here.
When it comes to these kinds of trends and back and forth, what I really like to have on board, quite frankly, are experts. I'm not going to be like, you know, hitting Google and just trying to read stupid stuff. I need someone like you because you've got all kinds of degrees and wonderful stuff that helps us understand at a credible level what's going on with this thing. So in this piece, which was in Healthline, one of my favorite resources out there, everyone, Healthline, it's very good. This was extremely controversial on TikTok. This was basically somewhat led by a Gen Z influencer whose name is Liv Schmidt. She rose to internet fame by sharing what she called skinny girl hacks.
That's right.
And it was okay, now, wait a minute now. Didn't we do this before, like in the past? And did that end poorly? I think so. And so actually, her hashtag, Skinny Talk, was banned by TikTok because all of a sudden, you know, you had the kind of content she was creating was pushing for under-eating to the extreme, and the glorification of looking like a toothpick, for a lack of a better term, and really getting into it. And your first quote here, Emily, was great. And we're going to start with that. Glorifying thinness as a marker of morality, health, or discipline is harmful to physical, emotional, and mental health. Okay, what's up with the skinny talk trend? Where in the heck did this thing come from when we thought we were kind of moving into more of a diversified look at women's bodies, as it were?
Yeah, it's true. It has been feeling that way, right? With the rise of more body acceptance and, you know, even the body positivity movement gaining traction, and then this comes in. So I think really the truth is that these trends keep happening. We see sort of up and down with what's like trending as far as body size and shape. I mean, we've been seeing that since the early 2000s with the internet. There was a big Tumblr trend in the early 2000s. This term Pro Anna was a lot of what this stuff was called. And for your listeners who may not be aware of what that means, it's just like pro anorexia content, not really trying to hide it. So it's always been, I would say, very fringe, you know, not very mainstream, but definitely present. And why these body trends happen, right? Why we see things go in and out of popularity? There's a bunch of guesses as far as why that is. Many sociologists are, you know, specialize in that. And I don't have the answer about why it's happening or why it keeps happening, just that it does.
Well, I'm watching a pendulum. This is like very much a pendulum. So if you look in the pages of Vogue magazine, that kind of is a bit of a signaler. For quite some time there, they were presenting more of a diverse body type. You had the, I believe her name is Ashley Graham types, who were clearly larger, beautiful girls, but they certainly weren't the super skinny models. And I think that there was a backlash from the modeling industry and the fashion industry that it was very dangerous to constantly grab these very young girls and keep them super skinny for your purposes, et cetera. I think we had that for a while. And then, you know, the fashion industry kind of weighed in, literally. And they said, okay, we're changing this little Hummer up. They started being more inclusive. So on the runways, in the pages of the fashion mags, in the couture houses, the rest of it, you started seeing more diversity at multiple levels, more cultural, as well as just the body types. That kind of hung out for a while. Then I noticed that over the course of about the last, I'd say half year or so, I look at it online, the Vogue pages, just to kind of keep up with trends. And sometimes they have some pretty decent articles and culture and this and that. And all of a sudden, all the girls and the men, skinny, 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 skinny.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no one there really has, unless it's a teeny bit of voluptuousness, like guest jeans, you know, usually has the models with the larger breasts and more of an hourglass, you know, thing going on, but they're not big. So I'm wondering where this is coming from in terms of the pendulum flipping. Could it be that we're really looking at a cultural shift again that is reflecting maybe, and when we look at eating disorders and you deal with this, so many women who get into eating disorders, men too, are all about control. It's about control. And maybe, could it be that we're living in a wild and crazy world where we really feel like so much is out of control, Lord knows, after COVID and everything, and that this is a way of expressing control, like everything around me may be a cluster, but I'm in control. What do you think of that hypothesis?
I think it's probably pretty spot on, to be honest. You know, I think that the way we think about our bodies and, like you're saying, what we do have control over, as those things shrink and as they feel more confusing and more out of our hands, we may turn to something we think that we can control, which is our bodies, which is part of the reason that this is such a damaging belief and such a damaging sort of rabbit hole to go down, because we really can't control our bodies very much. And so it can cause a lot of damage. And I'm sure we'll talk more about all of the damage that can be caused. But yeah, I think it's certainly true that, like, the world, the things going on around the world, the things going on in politics, the things, you know, all of everything is connected.
Well, it's harder for young people, and she's a Gen Z, to find a job these days. You have AI knocking on the door. Corporations are cutting back. I think that there's a lot of confusion, cultural confusion. You want to look into the future and you want to feel hopeful.
Yeah.
And I think that perhaps a lot of young women are a bit lost on this and feel as though, well, at least I can control what I put in my mouth. And, you know, the crazy things that this influencer and people like her had said on Skinny Talk, which is just ridiculously unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know, if you hear your stomach growling, applaud. That's a very good thing. That's positive. It's like, well, wait a minute. If your stomach's growling, I don't care who you are, you're hungry.
Yeah. That's a really well-wired mechanism, right? Hunger, eat.
Well, so as a physician who's dealt with this kind of craziness for decades, I'm here to tell you that what this does is it triggers. It triggers, first of all, if any young woman out there or anyone out there was reading this content and visualizing it and listening to these influencers pushing this stuff, as they say, oh, and this is what I ate today. I ate 800 calories. And, you know, it's like, what? Well, you said one of your quotes was on 800 calories per day, it's virtually impossible to meet your body's nutrient needs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I say amen to that one. And to glorify the fact that you had like tea for breakfast. What? I'm so sorry. This is so destructive. And to push extreme caloric restriction and to glorify it and to say that you're sanctimonious somehow and you found your own little tribe of people who will want to hop on this bandwagon, this is absolutely, hands down, disordered eating. Okay, why don't you define disordered eating, Emily?
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, when talking about eating, I usually say like there's diagnosable eating disorders, right? We have a handful that are commonly diagnosed. There's a really low rate of diagnosis. A lot of people that have eating disorders will never be diagnosed. But then what I call like subclinical eating disorders or disordered eating is a really large swath of behaviors. I sometimes like to kind of cap it by saying these are behaviors with food, with exercise that get in the way of living your life. So that could be spending all day worrying about what you're eating. That could be counting calories. That could be scrutinizing your body in the mirror every day. It could be over-exercising. It could also be more on the other side of binge eating or restricting your food to a very limited amount, skipping meals. There's just so many different behaviors that I would classify as disordered eating. And one of the big problems really with this is a lot of these behaviors are kind of considered normal. And that's the pipeline. Dieting or restricting your food, you know, it could just be sort of a little, oh, I'm just going to get healthy or something like that. That's, you might think that you're doing that, but it can really be the pipeline to an eating disorder or just some really disordered behaviors that are really hard to recover from.
Well, let's look at some red flags. Red flags, to your point, right, are rigid food rules.
Right, yeah.
You know, and you know, you made a really, really important point here by saying that a lot of this stuff's been normalized.
Oh, yeah.
So you invite somebody to a party and you go, I'm so sorry. Okay, these are the following things that I cannot eat. These are the following things I can eat. And I can't veer off. And the minute I start hearing that, I'm like, uh-oh. You know, I grab my red flag and start, you know, here we go.
Yeah, and then there's rigidity.
Yeah, the rigidity, being absolutely rigid, counting every single calorie. And then food guilt. I think of the vernacular like, I cheated.
Well, yeah.
Wait a minute. Doesn't that sound a little judgy? I hate that word. Just between you, me, and the wall. I hate it.
The cheating.
Cheating. I can't stand that. Because it's judgy. It's absolutely judgy. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And it really like perpetuates a lot of the self-blame and the belief that you can't stick to your diet. There's so much reinforcing that a lot of those words do, just like within one person. And yeah, I think they're really problematic.
One of the things that came off the skinny talk in the verbiage was the word treat. A lot of the tone of these kinds of hashtag skinny, whatever, are very accusatory, are very looking down upon you, tough love. I remember when it came to the word treat, the response was, you don't need treats. You're not a dog.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that awesome?
Oh, man. It was like, what? You know, as my German Shepherd quietly sleeps at my feet. Wait a minute. What's the use of living? And so what you're doing is you're going to a place of shame, blame, and guilt. And then finally, obsessive control.
Definitely.
Just, and that includes exercise in a big way. So I remember I spent a goodly amount of time studying this while I was at the National Institutes of Health by collaborating with the National Institute of Mental Health. And my God, I would watch, sadly, it just broke my heart, young women who are participants in some of our inpatient clinical work, just to constantly move. And I would say, why are you moving? Says, I have to burn these calories.
Yeah.
And then they would look at me. I'm an athlete, so I look, you know, fit and I'm muscular. And they go, God, I wish I was as skinny as you. I'm like, skinny? Nobody's ever accused me of being, you know, fit. Yeah, skinny, weird.
Yeah, it's true. It's very unabashedly like pro skinny in particular rather than fit or healthy. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. So how do you handle these people when they come in? What do you do when somebody is coming in and they're giving you these cues? It could be that they're currently either normal weight and always wanted to reach some magical, fantastical weight, or they are overweight or even obese. And they're starting to go down that line. And by the way, the number one disordered eating pattern in the country is binge eating disorder. They've just published a study of obese people finding that no less than 30 to 40%, my feeling is it's way more than that, have overt binge eating disorder. And many of those have also come from eating disordered places and they just rebounded over to obesity. So let's talk about this for a minute. What do you do with someone when they first come in? What do you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think before I answer that, just because the what you just said about binge eating and binge eating disorder being so popular, or not popular, that's the wrong word, being so prevalent, and because we know that any eating disorder, including binge eating, is ultimately a restrictive disorder. Binge eating and binge eating disorder aren't really, like when you're trying to help someone heal from that, you're not really just targeting the binging. You're targeting the things that are underneath and the restriction. And so I think that the question is like, why are so many women, you know, this affects everyone, but why are so many women taught that they need to restrict their diets? And, you know, obviously, the answer is multifactorial, but really, it's got to be. We can't discuss this without talking about how women's bodies are talked about, right? How women are taught, they're held to impossible standards. They're told that their body is the most important thing about them. And, you know, it's really kids and teenagers grow up thinking that being skinny is a way to be loved, is a way to be accepted. You kind of like can't really blame them to an extent for falling down these trends, right? The incentives for pursuing skinniness really tap into some of these like fundamental needs, right? We want to be healthy. We want to be connected to people. We want to feel accepted. We want to improve ourselves and whatever. There's so many different things. They're not superficial, just like, oh, I want to be skinny. Like, it's not just about that. It's about, I think, a misguided attempt to get some of our core needs met. So I think these trends are just going to keep coming and going if we don't address the fact that women's bodies are just really, really scrutinized. And obviously, we have to teach girls to prioritize other things in their lives.
And the priority that I love to push, continuing this little thread of thought, is fitness. Because, you know, once you get outside or wherever you're going to be to do more fitness related activities, I don't care if it's martial arts, if it's softball, if it's running, whatever. Once you do that, your mind gets off your body and you get into performance. I don't mean you're competing for the Olympics. I just mean your own self performance, whether it's during PE class or whatever. But women need to get out of their heads and actually see that their bodies are absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And once you fit into the appropriate activity, then all of a sudden you have a sense, to your point, of self-worth, self-confidence.
Yeah.
Right? And then you don't have to fall prey to all the disordered everything. I'm not talking about elite athletes. Let's leave them out, because their bodies are different. They're like machines, and they really do have to adhere in many respects to fairly rigorous muscularity, et cetera, body fat, et cetera. But for the average woman out there, especially young ones are just at this crazy time.
Yeah.
As you know, the prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is the CEO of the brain that helps you organize, plan, strategize, you know, make the right decisions, it's not fully formed. It's the last part of the brain to form. It's not fully formed until the age of 25. So now you were going to grab an 18-year-old who's reading this craziness about skinniness. You know, she's going to not really have the maturity and the life experience to be able to push back. You're catching her when she's trying to be cool and hip like all of, you know, the cool girls.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, she's following this craziness and really developing very disordered habits,
right,
that are not going to portend well. And so what do you do? You know, what are your actual steps with a client when they come in? I want you to answer that when we come back.
All right.
The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. Okay, so a client shows up. What do you do? What are the steps? What can they expect from an expert registered dietitian who's really into this? Go for it.
Yeah, well, really what I want to help someone do is understand themselves better. I really work to help somebody figure out why the behaviors that they're doing are happening. So what I usually start with most of my clients is a real exploration of their history. How has dieting and disordered eating shown up in your life? So the work I do is really very relational. It's kind of just like food therapy is often the way I kind of like to joke about it. It's not really a joke. It's quite serious, right? A lot of people had experiences like this when they were younger. In fact, I would say more than two-thirds, three-fourths or so of my clients and people that I work with in general had some sort of like incident, we'll say, or maybe it's just kind of subtle incidents throughout their youth. Often it's a mother who was very critical of someone's body. I think that kids often get reinforced, teens. Sometimes it's as young as 10 or 12, but can be older than that. They get reinforced that their disordered eating behaviors are healthy. And that's really especially dangerous for kids that are like a little chubby. They might lose some weight and they get reinforcement even from their doctors or from everyone in their life that they're like doing something good, but really it's these dangerous behaviors. So anyways, my point is just that that's a big part of beginning the work is like, did you realize how damaging that was for you? We start to kind of help them see why they're currently so worried about their body. Because a lot of the people that I see are still, sometimes they may even come see me because they want to lose weight still, or they know that their relationship with food isn't great, but they also still really want to lose weight. So we have to kind of uncouple those things.
I like that whole idea of just sort of, again, listening for the cues.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went to ballet academy. Honey, listen, you know, it was like wall-to-wall cues.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the reason why is you had to be the perfect ballet body. And if you weren't, okay, there was all hell
totally.
That was raining down on you. You walked away thinking there's everything wrong with me. And that's another point, again, about how our bodies are talked about and viewed and perceived. Well, one of the first things that I notice is that young girls especially can give you a litany of what they believe is wrong with them.
You're right.
You know, fill in the anatomical parts, okay?
Right, exactly.
My fill in the blank is too big, too small, too long, too short, too, you know, it goes on like that. Can we just do like something different, which is, can you tell young women and young girls what's right about them?
Yeah.
You know, here are all the things that are right. And it's not just that you got an A on a test.
Right.
It's like, you know,
you're worthy and wonderful just because you exist, first of all, right?
Exactly. And the other thing is you are talking about the fact that so much of this emanates from unmet basic primal needs.
Yeah.
And I think one is just plain love and attention.
Yeah.
And if you're not getting that, then you're going to seek it other places and you're going to misconstrue those responses, especially from adults when they say, oh my God, look at how good you look. Meanwhile, you've been, you know, meanwhile, you're a bulimic and is throwing up in the toilet every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But they're loving the way you look, you know.
They're getting so much praise. Absolutely.
And attention, the stuff that you need. How about we just spend more time with people and love them and tell them what's right about them. I want to hear what's right about people.
Yeah.
That would be so wonderful and exciting.
Yeah.
Instead of this, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm laughing because, you know, I'm writing my next book right now and we're talking about a lot of a women's anatomy and I'm always laughing about my calves. My calves since I was born have just been ridiculously muscular. And this comes from my father's side of the family. When I was in ballet, man, I was in the academy as a sort of preteen and the rest of it. The ballet mistress would come over to me with her stick. You know, they always had a stick. And she would just tap on my leg. She says, ah, too big, too big. And I said, watch this, bitch. And then I'd go, no, well, I'm not even kidding. I didn't even know the word bitch then. But so I would, when we did the center of the room exercises, my legs were the strongest in class because these legs, I mean, my thighs, I call Thelma and Louise because they are very powerful and my calves are just like crazy. So when we had to raise our legs to the side, the front, the back, and whatever, and everyone was like falling over and the balance thing, I'm just like an oak tree. I'm like, you know, girlfriends, I got this. And meanwhile, the teacher was like, what the hell? And because
like,
she,
I'm not going to take it. Yeah.
Yeah. She said, well, wait a minute. You know, I told you something's wrong with you and now you're the best in class with this. How does that work? And I'm like, listen up. You know,
oh,
what you're saying is wrong. It's a bad message. You know, I'm so strong.
It's so wonderful that you had whatever resilience you had to not take that on.
No, I was just a badass.
Yeah. And it's so, you know, what you're saying about exercise, I think is a really important point. And also kind of what happens when we focus on, for example, like shrinking in order to really like outsourcing our like knowing, right, of what's right for us. This is a perfect example. Like if you trusted your ballet teacher's opinion about what a proper calf was over your own, then it really like, it disconnects you from our body. When we outsource what we should be eating, right? Like when we're hungry, when we're full, what we want to eat, what feels good, what sounds good, and also the other things in life that we want to be doing, when we just keep externalizing those messages, it disconnects us with our body. And there's so many outcomes of that. People's relationships with exercise are really damaged. If, you know, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but one thing that I hear a lot from people I work with is they had a coach or somebody at some point told them their body was a problem for the sport, or they weren't quite good enough, right? They weren't like one of the top performers. And so they stopped trying. This just really grinds my gears, this idea that people's relationships with exercise are so damaged at a young age because of the way, I don't know, it has to do with body size and shape some, right? Like the calf example, but I think also with just being good at something. Don't we want to help people develop good relationships with exercise, right? Where they just want to keep doing it because it feels good and it makes them feel good. And it's joyful.
It's joyful. Right? It's fun, especially in those where you get to join other people.
Yeah.
And so now you've got like a little tribe going. And then next thing you knew, this is why for years I had my peak week retreats and we'd go off to national parks and amazing places and spa resorts and wherever. And we'd just trek around in a wild and crazy group with every single kind of body shape and backgrounds of these women were amazing. I just relished every single moment of that level of diversity because I want to hear it all. I want to experience it all. It's a good thing. So why not do something like that? It's just, you know, what we're finding in research now is that when people continuously join up with pickleball groups or whatever's out there, you know, a woman's running group or whatever may be around, your mental health improves. You have connectivity with other human beings. You're shocked to find that they have the same problems you do.
Right.
Who knew? You know, it's like, what? I'm not all alone.
Yeah.
And you know, you have a chance to have some joy and fun and kick back and really make friends.
Yeah.
Friends are like the priceless gems in our life crown. They're priceless. And later on in life, you know, when you hit 50 plus, et cetera, you're going to find, and research backs this up, that those friendships are what honestly enhances your longevity,
right,
and your health span.
I love that bit about research, you know.
Isn't that the best?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's awesome. Yeah.
Now let's just go, you know, I'm going to whip my stethoscope around my neck and I'm going to just go, I'm wagging my little finger at you girlfriends out there who are just falling prey or thinking of falling prey to this crazy skinny crap. First of all, you undereat, which means that you don't have muscles, okay? Don't have them. And that's the calorie burning engine in you. Hello, wake up. That means you just went from a Ferrari to a Hyundai, with all due respect to Hyundai owners. But there you are. Okay. So you're shooting yourself in the foot. What are you doing here? Number one. Number two, you're not getting enough nutrients, vitamins, minerals. And so your bones, newsflash,
yeah,
your bone mass peaks at the age of 28. And then slowly but surely, you're losing more bone density. You can absolutely mitigate a lot of that for as long as you can by exercising, because you're pulling on your muscles and your bones, which stimulates bone growth and bone building. And at the same time, you're maintaining a healthy body composition, and also, quite frankly, keeping reining in your total amount of fat so that, you know, you feel comfortable. I'm not judging. I'm not telling you that, you know, you're supposed to be a size whatever or any of that stuff. I'm saying aim for healthy, clean, balanced eating. Do you remember when we were talking about the pendulum going back and forth? I remember that there was a t-shirt that said, fit is the new skinny.
Yeah.
And it was a weird kind of, like, you had to kind of work with this one. Mm. But yeah, it's like, but then I understood what it was saying. It was like, pitch the skinny, like, don't ever call me skinny. Not unless, of course, you know, genetically, whatever, but don't ever call me skinny. Call me fit. Fit and healthy. I want to look fit. I want to look healthy. And if you want to see what you shouldn't look like, just, you know, flip open the pages of a mag like Vogue.
Right.
Oh my God. I mean, there's like 28 feet between their upper thighs. These people, I understand that a lot of women, especially, we're just born with very slender bodies with the kind of measurements and stuff that are used in modeling. I get it. These are human, well-paid clothes hangers. I get it. So these are kind of genetic freaks in many ways.
Sure. And maybe, I don't know. I have something interesting to say about that, but.
I'm just saying, interestingly, my mother was a very well-known couture model. Yeah, she was going through law school and she used the money from modeling to pay for her tuition in law school. So she was kind of interesting in that respect. But she was just plain, I mean, for 97 years, she was just about the same damn size.
Yeah.
And she never, outside of pregnancy, she never veered. She never sweated weird eating. She ate very well. She just had really interesting genetics. I have the athletic genetics.
Yeah.
She had that.
Yeah, it is very genetic. I can't remember the exact numbers, but somewhere between, you know, 40 and 60 or 40 and 70, I don't know, maybe you know, of our body size is really determined by genetics. And I think it's actually really important to help people understand that, right? Because it can really help someone develop healthy behaviors like healthy eating and exercise, sleep, all of those things that we know really help people with health and with their health markers. And so getting down to a certain weight is just not always going to do that.
Well, you actually were quoted in the article. You had so many great quotes. That's why I immediately dialed you up and said, girl, get on this podcast. You said healthy weight is a term I find problematic.
Right.
The metrics we use, like BMI, are deeply flawed and don't account for natural individual variation. You said, if we define it more functionally, a healthy weight is the range your body naturally lands when you're eating enough, moving in ways that feel good, and not caught in the strict, obsessive repeat cycle. I really love that. The way I have always felt was just keep heading toward healthier.
Yeah.
That means you're clean eating as best you can. And there's so many wonderful, delicious options out there, culturally, otherwise, just make it work. Add the physical activity, add the good sleep and stress management. All of those things come as a holistic package to be able to fight off this other craziness. And I think finally, I just love going back to this issue you brought up, Emily, which is something foundational is missing.
Yeah.
And address it. And that means, are you getting love?
Yeah.
Are you getting the appropriate affection and attention? Do you feel valued? Do you have a sense of self-worth? Answer all those questions. And I think that you're going to be able to see where a lot of the insecurity you have is generated and it boils to the top, where you finally want to seek some extreme way of bringing all of this under control.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It's a big distraction. Yeah. It takes so much time and energy to moderate your food this way, right? And plus, you know, a lot of the times they're eating way less calories than they need. And so they're likely to be tired. You know what runs on calories? Our brain, you know, like, they're not going to be at their best and be able to like live the life that they want, right? It makes me so sad, really. We miss out on so much like joy, connection, right? All of these things. And I think another problem is like when the aesthetics become the most important thing and like that, you know, just being in that get as skinny as you can, you may get at this attention, but it's not going to be the right kind of attention.
I agree with you. And, you know, another piece of verbiage out there, Emily, is fix my body.
Yeah.
Fix it. It's like
sure.
I want to drive into a Jiffy Lube and just say, fix my body.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well,
again,
so
outsourcing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, fix my body. So the plastics guys and the rest of it. The other thing, you know, just constantly looking at your body, being negative, instead of saying, my God, I have powerful legs.
Right.
My goodness, I could get on that cycle. I could go straight up that hill, left everyone else in the dust. And then one of the best quotes I have, this was in my book, Body for Life for Women. I remember Betty Lawson was a member of my Peak Week retreat. For a long time in her life, she was just self-shaming, blaming, and guilting. Like, why can't I be, you know, a better size? Why can't, you know, blah, blah. It was always negative. And then we were hiking up one of the magnificent mountains, a Green Mountain, outside of Aspen for this Peak Week retreat. It was just impossibly perfect and beautiful. But you had a rock and roll, honey. I mean, this was like you were hiking. Hard. She literally hit the top. And I remember, because I was waiting for her up there, the first thing out of her mouth was, oh my God. And she looked at the vista around her because we were surrounded by other 14,000 foot mountains in Colorado. And she just soaked it all in. She says, huh. The last thing on my mind as I hit the top of this mountain is, oh God, my hips are too big.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, because she was in her body and not scrutinizing it from the outside. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And she also said, my beautiful legs got me here. I did something many people can't do. I hiked to the top. Here I am. And I almost fell to my knees. So I made certain that her quote was in my book, because if that didn't drive it home, honey, nothing, absolutely nothing does. So I know that my wonderful Herb podcasters out there are going to want to know more about you, because you seem to absolutely, totally get it. So how can they learn more about you? What's your website? Tell us.
My website is just my first and last name. That's emilyvanek.com.
And spell that.
EmilyVanek. One of the ways that I really love helping people, I have a program. It's like a program and a workbook and all of this stuff that really helps people with their relationship with food. It's a real walkthrough. I teach intuitive eating. I think you mentioned that at the beginning. That's one of the main methods I use to help people just really heal their relationship with food, as that's probably the simplest way to put it. And yeah, that program is called
Love. And you're located in?
I'm located in Austin, Texas. My practice is virtual nationwide, however, so you can reach me from wherever you're at.
Okay, say that website one more time.
It's emilyvanek.com, EmilyVanek. I am over on Instagram as well at emily.nutrition, where I do my absolute best to provide an alternative to skinny talk.
Yeah, oh, thank heavens for that. We're neutralizing the toxicity of that insane skinny stuff, which is so unhealthy and so crazy. Girlfriends out there in the Herb podcast land, take advantage of Emily. You'll see all of her information also posted with our podcast as well when they go live, and take advantage of experts who have had years in the field and really know how to deal with these issues, because all of us need support.
Yeah.
And all of us really should go to credible sources, to say the least.
And it's so easy to go down those other rabbit holes, but we really see that the more support, the more diverse bodies we see, right, on social media, it makes an impact. So,
oh, there's absolutely no question. Emily, I just want to say thanks so much for being
thanks
on the Herb podcast. Awesome. Keep up the fantastic work. And I also want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all of which are rooted in nature. And, you know, we've been talking about disordered eating. We've been talking about maybe not making your mark with healthy foods and the rest of it. And we've got a lot of gaps in there. So run on over to Solaray, SolaRay.com to learn more about the multivitamins, the Bone Complete products that will help support this wonderful pathway to a longer health span. And then also check out the new Her Life Stages products. Learn all about it when you go to solaray.com. Now take a moment to leave us a review, because we love to hear from you. This has been a production of Podcast Health. Your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and just seize the day. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.